Joy, thank you and your team, Janice and Ronnie, and anyone else who's doing this work for our inner group. As I said when I first, you know, hopped on the Zoom call today, and I wrote for Joy in that intro, I'm so grateful that I came here because we have this great recovery and people willing to give, and people who set up meetings so that when I was in desperate need, something existed. And anyway, I'm so grateful. And Brian, thank you for sharing your story too. I'm also really glad I'm second. so thanks for going first. I don't know why, but being second made me a little less nervous. Though frankly, anybody who knows me knows that I don't have a problem talking. So for those of you who've known me in meetings. So there's a lot that I could say about this topic. And I just wanted to give a shout out to Michael, who's not on the call, who I think is somehow involved in how I got to be speaking at this. And I'm just grateful. It's a WE program. And I'll talk more about that. But I love this relapse, remorse, and resentment topic. And I just think it's so... Well, alliteration. I mean, how fun is that? but to be honest, I'm really going to talk about the first two, relapse and remorse, and probably mostly about relapse, because I have no business talking about resentment. I still have a lot. I still find it a lot in my life. And, you know, my higher power is just going to have to keep working on me. But anyway, I'll share a little bit about my story. I came into OA, actually, I was 12-stepped from a friend in my first program. I come from a family riddled by addiction. And so I was in I was in Al-Anon, and a program friend of mine must have heard me and my insanity around food, body image, et cetera, and actually gave me a copy of the 12 and 12 and brought me to my first meeting. And I was very hesitant. And I knew when I came to my first program, it hit me like a ton of bricks, like I belong here. But when I came into OA, it was still the first couple meetings I went to, I wasn't sure. I wasn't sure if I fit in with all of you, or maybe more importantly, I wasn't sure that I could admit it to myself. So I went to just a few meetings, and I was going through my second divorce at the time, and moved here to Tucson, not knowing a single person, for a really stressful job. And it became very clear that I belonged in this program. And because of my time in that other program, I knew what addiction looked like. And I knew those people who had impacted me with their disease, I knew what that looked like. And so when I started doing the same things, I knew I belonged in OA. So my disease, I'm not sure if I can put a date on it, but I know for sure I had it as a very young child. And it's in my family. There are no thin people in my family tree. We joke we are sturdy Midwesterners. It takes more than just a light wind to blow us over. You know, we've got a whole bunch of stories that sort of justify the way we use food. And so my disease, you know, it was there. I was always overweight. I was not ever like people always say, oh, when I was a kid, I was so thin. No, I was a chubby kid my whole life. I had to wear husky clothing. They used to call it back in the, you know, 70s and 80s. I had to wear like adult ladies clothing in like middle school, because I the like the junior section, I never shopped in the junior section, like even at the teenage, I never had that size or shape of body. But thankfully, because of my family, I didn't have any shame. There was no shame about being overweight, and it's just what we did. So I'm grateful for that. You know, I think it's funny. It took me a long time for that denial to come off. But I didn't carry that shame anyway, not from my family. So, you know, food was everything. It was my primary relationship. It was my comfort, my companionship, I used it. I used food to numb, avoid, celebrate. I mean, I used it for everything. Everything was food. And, but there were early signs, early cracks. I had a boyfriend in high school who said, I won't hang around with you at lunchtime if you eat candy and drink Dr. Pepper, because you get mean. And, I didn't really register for me then, but I see these things now. I see things now that didn't really make much sense, but, you know, after many years became very clear. So I knew that sugar was one of my main problems. And I was, you know, working this super stressful job. And I was coming home every night and eating just the small sized little things, but I'd eat a whole bag, and then I'd hate myself and I'd be so remorseful. And I would say, tomorrow I'm going to do it different. I'm not going to do this tomorrow. And then the same thing would happen. And it was just day after day after day. And I was hating myself more and more. And, you know, I was in this place and I didn't know anyone, and I was divorced twice. And, you know, I was just like, what a loser I am. Probably there was just layers of self-pity and self-hatred and just all kinds of stuff. And the doors were open, and I went to my first meeting here, in a place that was very close to my office. And, this woman said, I've been in this program, you know, for whatever number of years, and I've been free from recreational sugar for 22 years or something. I can't remember, 22, 23 years. And I kid you not, I really thought, is that even humanly possible? Like, can you live without eating recreational sugar? Like, is that a thing? How would one do that? But I knew I wanted what she had. I needed what she had. And so I asked her to be my sponsor, which is a miracle, because it took me like 5 years in my first program to even ask for a sponsor. I'm an only child. My parents were both addicts. We moved all over the country. As an adult, I moved to, you know, pursue my career and all this. So I have no stability in relationships, and I've been alone and independent and, you know, all this stuff. And so the thought of like telling someone else my problems. And then I remember thinking, I'd hear in meetings, people say, oh, I talk to my sponsor every day. And I thought to myself, who would talk to another person every single day? Like, it's too much. It's too much. I was so isolated. I was so isolated. Anyway, I asked her to be my sponsor. She said, yes. We worked together, got some step work done, and then she moved. And then I asked another person to be my sponsor, and we, you know, got some step work done, and then something happened and she had to change or something. And then, I got a promotion and a new boss, and my whole schedule changed. I met my third husband. I thought maybe I got this. You know, maybe I got this. Maybe I don't really need this program and the fellowship. I know I got the literature. I can read. I know I got this. So that was relapse number one. I stopped going to meetings, and that lasted for 2 years. I was miserable in that time. And I was resentful at my boss. Like, how dare she make me work so much? And I, you know, I was full of resentment. So one day I go to work. My boss says, you know, we've changed our strategy. We don't need you anymore. When your contract is over, you're done. You don't have a job anymore, which was shocking to me. Shocking, shocking, shocking. My career was my career in food. That was my whole life. And so I lost part of my identity. But I got a lot of free time. And so I came back to OA. Because of course I had put on whatever weight, you know, I had lost. For me, this program, yeah, I have problems with food, but you know, and I've always been overweight, but I've never been obese or like really grossly overweight. And so, you know, my body weight's changed about 40-ish pounds. And that sounds like a lot, but what I know to be true is until I lose 15 or 20 pounds, nobody else even knows. Like, it's not like I am so obsessed with like every little thing, but other people don't even know. Anyway, so I'm back in the program and, you know, I get another sponsor because I realized this time, like, I have to, I cannot do it by myself. So I get another sponsor. I work the steps. She asks me if I'm willing to plan my food. And I say, no, because I just want to eat what I want to eat when I want to eat it. But I did, you know, I had done the 301, you know, three meals a day, no snacking, one day at a time, no recreational sugar. I had done that and it worked. So I was willing to do that again. Eventually I did become willing to plan my food. And that was a real moment where I got really committed to my abstinence. And I was really willing for the first time to do whatever it took to keep my abstinence. So that was really a miracle. At some point in that willingness, I actually hit my goal weight, whatever that is. And I think that day I started back on my relapse number two. You know, there was something like, yay, I did it, celebratory, I can eat again. There was some kind of insanity around using food for things that food is not designed for. But the thing I did this time in my relapse is I never stopped putting my butt in the chair. So I just kept going to meetings. And that was a miracle. That is if you just remember one thing I say the whole time, just keep going to meetings, no matter what. And I think somebody else said it. It's there. It's in the secret is in the meetings. It's in the fellowship. And anytime we are ready for it, it'll be there. So that's my second relapse, but I didn't leave the program. I wasn't willing to, you know, use a food plan. There was lots of stuff I wasn't willing to do, but I kept going to meetings. And in fact, at that time, one of my favorite meetings shut down. And you know, I'm a self-centered addict. And so this meeting I really needed, you know, through my three meetings a week, it shut down. And so I was praying a lot because, you know, all this time I, you know, really had a change in my notion of higher power and what it means to me and what it does for me and what I need my higher power to be and do in my life to keep me abstinent and sane at all, any hope of sanity. And actually it was, I was praying and I said, okay, you know, God, if this meeting shuts down, I need another meeting. So, you know, what do you want me to do about that? And it became clear to me somehow in that time of prayer and then just waiting for answers, I heard, start a meeting focused on relapse, because that's what you need. And if you need it, there might be other people who need it too. And I thought, that's crazy. I'm not starting a meeting. I don't know how to do that. What am I supposed to do? I'm just one person, blah, 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 whatever. So I was just willing, like, okay, just show me the next right thing. So I just started talking to my program friends, like, hey, I kind of got this idea. What do you think about it? Anyway, there's at least a couple of people in this call right now today who are part of that, starting that relapse meeting. And that was a beautiful journey. That's the Tuesday 5:30 meeting. It's still one of my absolute favorite meetings. And it's a totally safe place to admit that relapse happens. It doesn't happen to all of us, but it happens. And we are welcome to come back shame-free. Just come on back anytime. And so that's still one of my, I'm so grateful because every time I go to that meeting or hear someone say, I love the Tuesday meeting, I'm humbled because my higher power is using me. Why am I here today? I think the friend of mine that said, hey, Jen, maybe you could speak. I'm going through one of the most horrendous seasons of my life. And it started in August of 2020 with kind of a domestic violence moment. And my husband and I are now getting divorced. And it's horrible the way the whole thing has unfolded. And it's truly been the worst. I was living in my car for a while, and it's been really, really horrible because I stopped working and I started just doing volunteer work in ministry. So when my husband decided he didn't want to be married anymore, which is interesting that it was his decision and not mine after what happened, but I lost my home, I lost my dog, I lost my income, my just everything that I thought my life was, except I didn't lose my recovery. So my recovery family has so been here for me, and I've been leaning really, really hard into the program. And actually I have three. I joined another program. So now I have three programs, I have three sponsors, I have three sets of meetings, and somehow in all of this, I have been abstinent. I have been abstinent through this most hideous season of my life. So how is that? I use the tools, all of them, most all of them. I'll be honest, I do not work a perfect program. Everybody who knows me knows I hate to write, and I'm really bad with the 10th step. I do it, but I know I should do it every day. I don't, whatever. Imperfect programs still work. So I love the tools of the this. They really work. I love the principles behind our steps and traditions. And frankly, you know, I don't have a great memory. So I just really remember that the principle behind step one is honesty. I know the others, hope, faith, courage, integrity, da, 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 whatever. But you know, honesty is the number one thing. If I can be honest, I can recover. It says that in the big book. The only people who can't recover are those who are constitutionally incapable of being honest. So all I have to do is be honest. There are some great tools that help me in moments of slipping and sliding. There's that fantastic handout on slipping and sliding. It's a bunch of questions. You know, I hate to write, so I'll usually call and talk to somebody about one of those questions if I really need, if I see that I'm slipping and sliding. I was in a meeting once where somebody brought a little frog and said, you know, fully relying on God. Some of you were in that meeting, I know. And she gave us these little plastic frogs. I've taken it all over the world traveling. The frogs go with me. And I am absolutely, even today, fully relying on God to do for me what I cannot do for myself. And right now, that's everything. I still have no income. I am living with a friend. My life is not what I want it to be right now, but it's good enough. I have everything I need. I have a higher power who loves me and who has carried me and who continues to carry me, who is using angels, people with skin, you know, angels with skin on. People have shown up for me in miraculous ways because I've been willing to ask for help. And I'm just living literally 24 hours at a time, life on life's terms. And I wanted to share a couple of my favorite things here before I stop my talking. In the big book, page 77, it says, our real purpose is to fit ourselves to be of maximum service to God and the people about us. And that's true for me. The more I think about what I can pack into the stream of life, what I can do for other people, the better my life is. That is for sure 100% true. And I love the promises in the big book as well. Having worked the steps now for almost 20 years, I will say that nearly all of the steps have come true for me. So I'm just, all of the promises. So I'm just going to read them because they're so amazing. And I hope that you all claim them and see them for yourselves too. If we are painstaking about this phase of our development, we will be amazed before we are halfway through. We are going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. We will not regret the past nor wish to shut the door on it. We will comprehend the word serenity and we will know peace. No matter how far down the scale or up the scale we have gone, we will see how our experience can benefit others. That feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. We will lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in our fellows. Self-seeking will slip away. Our whole attitude and outlook upon life will change. Fear of people and of economic insecurity will leave us. We will intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us. We will suddenly realize that God is doing for us what we could not do for ourselves. I have seen them. I continue to see them. My friends are freaking out. Jen, you gave up your career 7 years ago. You don't have a job. You have no income. How? Blah, blah, blah. And I just keep saying, God's got me. God has walked me through my whole life up to this point. God is not going to abandon me now. Plus, frankly, I've been a career coach for a long time. So I don't know, but for me, the God I serve would not allow me to help thousands of other people and then leave me stranded when I needed work. So that's my higher power there. And just the last thing I want to say is, you know, I think one of the greatest gifts I have been given is faith. I think my higher power is just like pours. If there's a bucket, I got a whole bunch of it. God is just pouring faith into me over these years. And I just wanted to share that prayer is such a massive part of my life. I just pray about everything. I have a very casual relationship with God. It's very serious, but it's for like, I'm like, God, help me. Or, you know, God, please, you know, put the right foods in my path today. Keep these things away. God, save me from being angry. I'm praying a lot of that one these days about my soon to be ex-husband. Save me from being angry. You know, set aside prayer, resentment prayers, abstinence, the serenity prayer, the third step prayer, the seventh step prayer, all of them are excellent. But I just wanted to share my favorite. And it's the last thing I'll say, the OA promise. I put my hand in yours and together we can do what we could never do alone. No longer is there a sense of hopelessness. Oh, help me. Now I've forgotten all of a sudden. No longer is there a sense of hopelessness. No longer do we need to lean on our own unsteady willpower or something. We are all together now reaching out our hands for help. And oh my God, I can't believe I can't remember.
Power and strength.
Power and strength greater than our own. And
as we join hands, we find love and understanding beyond our wildest dreams.
Thank you guys for listening to me. And I hope everybody finds what they need in this meeting today and every day in our program of OA. Thanks.